You're in the chat room.
You are indeed in the chat room, and this morning a timely conversation given the release last week without warning of some 20 refugees who'd been in immigration detention for years, including the last eight from Melbourne's Park Hotel. Australia doesn't just have refugees who need support. Did you know that we also have thousands of people who are stateless, who for one reason or another have no country to call their own? It's a massive global problem. And in Melbourne, we now have a centre dedicated to building knowledge and finding solutions to the plight of stateless people. This morning, Professor Michelle Foster joins us in the chat room, director of the Peter McMullen Centre on Statelessness, the University of Melbourne. Professor Foster, good morning.
Good morning, Ali.
I think we should probably start with a really basic question, which is, what is a stateless person? Or who is,
thanks,
I should
Ali.
Say, probably, rather than
yes.
what.
It's a really good starting point, because what I find when I talk to people is that many people really have never heard of the concept of statelessness and have no basic understanding of it. But you encapsulated the meaning quite well in your introduction. You're right that a stateless person is a person who is not recognised as a national by any state in the world. And if you just stop for a moment as listeners to think about what that would mean. I mean, of course, stateless people live somewhere. They were born somewhere. Most live in the country in which they were born and indeed in which their family has lived for generations. But for various reasons, they are excluded from belonging in a legal sense, in the sense of having citizenship within that state. That could be because of racial or ethnic or religious discrimination. They may belong to a minority that is persecuted within that country, and a form of that persecution is to be denied nationality. It may be that they are born into one of the 25 countries in the world that do not permit women to pass on nationality to their children on an equal basis with men. And that, you know, they may be stateless as a result of that. There are various other causes as well. But as you say, it is a very significant global problem. It means that people are living in a country that, as I say, they feel they belong to because they were born there and they live there, but they are excluded from the most basic fundamental rights. And if we just think for a moment about what citizenship means to each and every one of us who are listening today, we think about the right to education, to healthcare. People often can't even do basic things like open a bank account, to get married. You know, a range of social and economic and civil rights are denied to people who are stateless.
So how really many people are stateless around the world?
Well, that is another excellent question, and it's one that we can't provide a really precise answer to. So the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, which is the UN agency that is given the remit or the mandate to protect and reduce statelessness, they estimate around 10 million people are stateless. Others have estimated that's closer to 15 million people. But the World Bank has estimated that 1.1 billion people globally lack legal identity. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that 1.1 billion people are stateless, because you may lack legal identity but still have a nationality. But what we can understand then is that somewhere between 10 to 15 million and 1.1 billion are stateless. Now, you may ask, you know, why do we not know more precisely what that figure looks like? Because we have quite good figures about other persons of concern to the UNHCR, like internally displaced persons and refugees. And the answer is that stateless people are often simply ignored or not counted within the country in which they live. And so there's a problem with data, because the UNHCR, which is, as I say, the agency that collects this data, relies on states to tell it how many people are stateless within each state. And if each individual country is not properly counting stateless people, then that, of course, leads to a serious gap in data.
So what about in Australia? Do we have any sense of just how many stateless people we have and who they are specifically in this country?
Well, it's another really good question, and unfortunately we don't have a really good precise answer to that, because in short, there is no reliable set of data regarding the number of stateless people in Australia. Now, over many years, the Australia, like all the other countries that report to the UNHCR, has reported annually on how many refugees we have, how many asylum seekers, etc. But their reporting of how many stateless people are in Australia has been very inconsistent. So, for example, for many years they've simply said there's none, or there's so few that it's not even worth reporting on. In 2019, they said it was zero, but then in 2018, prior to that, there were 132 stateless people. But suddenly, in the most recent report, Australia has said that there are 5,221 stateless people in Australia. Now, it's hard to believe that we've jumped from zero to 5,221 in 1 year. Clearly, there's a serious problem here in terms of reporting and understanding who is stateless. And that is fundamentally because Australia does not have any reliable method of determining who is stateless. Now, we have an excellent system of what we call refugee status determination. So if a person claims to be a refugee, we have a very sophisticated system, one that's regarded to be a very high standard globally, to determine who is a refugee. But we don't have the equivalent procedure for statelessness.
And how does... Sorry, can I just interrupt you, Professor Foster, and ask you, what is the overlap or the intersection between refugees and stateless people? Are you necessarily an asylum seeker if you are stateless?
Not necessarily. It's another really good question. There can be an overlap because, as I mentioned, many people are stateless because they've been denationalised as a form of persecution. And so in that case, if you've left your country, so let's say the Rohingya, that many Rohingya stateless persons have come to Australia over the years, and many are recognised as refugees because they're outside their country and they have a well-founded fear of being persecuted in the form of denationalisation, but also, you know, all the human rights consequences that flow from that by reason of their ethnicity. And so there are categories of people that can claim to be refugees and are protected as such. But others who are stateless, not necessarily because of, it may be because of discrimination, but it doesn't amount to the definition of a refugee, can often just find themselves in a legal limbo in Australia. So they are deserving of protection. We have international obligations that we've willingly taken on. We signed on to the Stateless Convention decades ago, so we've willingly taken on those obligations, but we haven't implemented them in domestic law. And so where we have a stateless person in Australia who isn't a refugee, there is no way of determining their status and no visa category for them. So even if Australia says, oh yes, we recognise you're stateless, there's no visa category that they are entitled to that will give them protection. And so what happens then? If you're a non-citizen and a non-visa holder, then you're either sent back home or you end up in detention. If you're a stateless person, you have no home. There is no country that has the obligation to take you back. And therefore, we do have a lot of people in detention who are stateless. Now, you just mentioned in your introduction that 20 people have been released recently, and that's true. So that means it's hard to know exactly how many people are in detention at the moment because the latest government figures are from December. But as of the 31st of December 2021, the government has acknowledged that there are 41 stateless people in detention. And the problem with that is not just that there's 41 stateless people in detention, but they are potentially in there for the rest of their lives. Because where are they going to go? They're not, as I say, they have no home to go to. We have no visa for them, no visa category. And we therefore know that they are at extreme risk of indefinite detention. In fact, in Senate estimates in 2020, the government acknowledged that the average period of detention for stateless people is 738 days. And that's detention simply for being stateless, not as a result. Sorry.
You mentioned the Rohingya. Can you tell us some of the stories of people who do find themselves in this country and stateless? Just sort of a real personal picture of who we're talking about.
Sure. Well, in the centre, as you mentioned, I'm the director of the Peter McMullen Centre on Statelessness, and we have, an interest in statelessness globally. But of course, given we're based in Australia, we are undertaking several research projects in Australia. And my colleague, Katie Robertson from the centre, in conjunction with Sarah Dale at the Refugee Advice Casework Service in Sydney, undertook a pilot study over the last couple of years trying to understand who is stateless in Australia. And they looked particularly at children who are born into statelessness. So if a child is born here in Australia, they don't necessarily get Australian citizenship, but if they would otherwise be stateless, they do have an entitlement to citizenship. And so in this pilot project, Katie and Sarah interviewed various stateless people, and here's just a little snapshot of a couple called Noor and Faisal, who were stateless by virtue of their Rohingya ethnicity, and they have had several children in Australia, and so part of the project was understanding what their needs are. And if you don't mind, if we have time, I'll just quickly read from an extract of what they said about their experience. They say, "We are stateless. We have no country. This is very hard. In our home country, we had nothing. Our life was very difficult. We couldn't do anything, go anywhere, choose our path. Coming from nothing, we want to be happy in Australia, for our kids to be happy in their future. Our hope is that citizenship will make them safer and ensure they have a better life." They go on, "We want our children to grow up and become whatever they want to become, for them to have a safe and bright future. I believe getting citizenship will make this easier for them. My husband and I have come from nothing. I want my children to have a better life. I want them to be Australian citizens. This is my dream."
So what's the process for them to now go through that process of getting citizenship?
Well, fortunately, Australia has implemented its obligations under... So there's two treaties that deal with statelessness. The one that's about protecting people who arrive here who are stateless is the one that Australia still hasn't implemented. But there's another treaty about reducing statelessness, and that says that where a person would otherwise be stateless and they're born in the country and they would otherwise be stateless, they have an entitlement to citizenship. We have implemented that in our Citizenship Act. The trouble is it can be quite a complex process. Many people who would be entitled to this don't necessarily understand it. And so at the Peter McMullen Centre, we set up as part of this project that I've just mentioned, we also set up a pilot clinic, again, in conjunction with our wonderful colleagues at the Refugee Advice Casework Centre. And we are now sort of translating that pilot into a fully fledged clinic whereby individuals who have children, I mean, we're obviously representing the children, but via the parents, who think they might have that entitlement can apply to have assistance, to receive assistance with obtaining citizenship. And the pilot was very successful. We were able to help around 10 families, around 20 children, and we're hoping to sort of scale up incrementally over the next couple of years.
And you mentioned at the outset when we talked about how people come to be stateless, you talked about countries where citizenship can't be passed on to children through the mother.
Yes.
I mean, how many countries are there? And what does that mean for single parents? Can it be passed on through grandparents, or how does it work?
Yeah, so it's about 25 countries. So it was 27, and through the UNHCR's campaign to eradicate statelessness in 10 years, they've successfully had two countries change their laws, but there are still 25 countries. And essentially what it means is that if a child is born into a situation where it's a sole parent or the father is missing, then they cannot gain citizenship. And there's usually no other method of obtaining citizenship. To give you an idea of the scale, I mean, in Nepal, for example, that's one of the countries that you would say is in our region. The government says that there are no stateless persons, but others have estimated that there are up to 4 million stateless people in Nepal by virtue of this gender discrimination. Another really good example is Syria. And if you think about, so Syria is one of the countries that doesn't allow women to pass on nationality on an equal basis. And if we think about what's happening in Syria, there's about 6.8 million people have left Syria. The UNHCR estimates that about 1 in 4 are female-headed households. So that's potentially a new generation of stateless people. Now, not all of those children will be stateless. They may be able to obtain citizenship in the country in which they've sought asylum, but not necessarily so. So it essentially is a mechanism that creates new generations of statelessness. And this is what makes it so difficult to eradicate. As I mentioned, the UNHCR has this idea that we will, and I think it's an excellent initiative ideal to eradicate statelessness within 10 years of 2014. So we're, you know, we've only got a few years to go.
That's 2 years to go. I mean, that's incredibly, that's impossible, isn't it?
Well, I think it is impossible, but I think we can't give up. We have to keep raising awareness and identifying, you know, not just trying to eradicate existing situations of statelessness, but being aware of emerging situations of statelessness. Another really worrying situation, again, in our region is what's happening in the state of Assam in India, in the northeast of India, where close to 2 million people have been left off the National Register of Citizens. Now, it's unclear what their fate will be, but that's...
And why? Why? Is that because of they're a minority? Is it a deliberate leaving off?
Well, there is, I mean, this has been contested, but there is an argument that it's about essentially ethnic discrimination. So again, you know, this ethnic, racial, religious discrimination underpins many situations of statelessness globally, which again makes it so difficult to deal with. But, you know, as I say, we have an obligation globally, all of us have an obligation to try to eradicate statelessness because everyone has a right to nationality. It's a fundamental human right. I mean, it's as Hannah Arendt said, you know, it's the right to have rights. If you have no nationality, then it's so difficult to achieve the most basic rights to which you're entitled by virtue of being human.
So what
it's a really serious.
It is. It's a hugely serious problem. But I wonder, as a centre on statelessness, what you hope to achieve, because it is a problem that can fundamentally only be resolved by governments, because it's only governments who can grant citizenship.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I think because statelessness as an issue has been overlooked historically, I think that's fair to say. I think the international community, although statelessness is certainly not a new issue, it's been around for as long as we've had states, but it has been almost sort of the poor second cousin, if you like, to the refugee focus. But in recent times, there is more and more attention, more resources being dedicated to statelessness. But there is still so much to do. There is so little knowledge. So the example I gave you, just even thinking about Australia, I'm not suggesting that we have a major stateless population, you know, relative to other countries, but we certainly do have a situation that needs to be resolved, and yet there just has been a lack of knowledge about that. And so, as I mentioned, at the centre, we're undertaking, I mentioned a little pilot project that we did. We're now, we have some funding from the Australian Research Council to do a sort of a full-scale mapping of the state of statelessness in Australia. And the hope is that by sort of shedding a light on the predicament and the reality of those who are stateless in Australia, that we can develop policy responses and hopefully, you know, show that there is a problem that needs to be resolved. The clinic is another good example of providing, you know, really concrete advice and assistance to people. We're also undertaking a history project looking at the history of those who have settled in Australia historically, who came here as stateless people and what it meant to them to gain Australian citizenship. We're also running education programs. We have an intensive course. You know, a lot of it is about raising awareness and sort of providing people with the resources that they need to
because it's often the real discussion around statelessness, or really the only discussion that certainly that I'm sort of aware of in recent times, has been around stripping someone of their right to citizenship if they're I can't even think of what the appropriate charges are, but if they're deemed to be a threat, but they can only be stripped if they have the right to citizenship elsewhere.
That's right. And you're right. I mean, if we think about the categories of those who may be stateless in Australia, we can say, well, those who've arrived, those who are born here, and then potentially those who have their citizenship taken away. Now, the numbers, again, it's quite hard to get figures on exactly how many people have lost their Australian citizenship through those citizenship stripping provisions that, as you say, are sort of a result of the concern about foreign fighters and terrorism. You're right that there is a protection that it's only applicable to dual nationals, but there has been concern since 2015 when this was introduced that the procedural safeguards have been insufficient, so that it's essentially, I mean, there has been some changes recently, but early on, there was a lack of procedural safeguards, and there was a concern that there was an assumption that a person had a second nationality when indeed they did not. There was sort of a notorious case of Neil Prakash, which some of your listeners may recall, a few years ago, where the Australian government had taken away his citizenship on the basis that he had Fijian citizenship. But Fiji said, no, he's not a citizen here. And so there's a concern that even though sort of theoretically there's a protection for dual nation, that it only applies to dual nationals, and in other words, a concern that people are not made stateless through this procedure, that actually, in practice, statelessness can occur. I don't think it's fair to say that this is a major cause of statelessness, because if we think about the overall figures, you know, it tends to only be in Australia, at least, estimates are somewhere, you know, in the tens of people who've been had their citizenship taken away. But it's another emerging trend that we need to be aware of. And as I say, if we come back to the aim of eradicating statelessness, we need to ensure that we're not creating new opportunities that will lead to statelessness.
And do you hope, Michelle Foster, that when you map the state of statelessness, that we will have a clearer picture of how many, where they are, and why they're in the position that they are in this country?
That's exactly right. I mean, I'm not sure that we'll be able to identify every stateless person in Australia, but it's, as you say, trying to sort of get a picture of, you know, generally who they are, what their predicament is, you know, what the cause of statelessness was, but then also what their situation here is in Australia, and what sort of policy changes need to be made in order to ensure that people are protected, as is their right to be protected because of their statelessness.
It is. It's a something that, as you say, when we do talk a lot about refugees and asylum seekers, and then you know, there's not necessarily a correlation with stateless people. It's a huge challenge globally. Thank you very much for joining us and telling us a little bit about the Centre on Statelessness.
Thanks, Ali. It was a pleasure.
Professor Michelle Foster there. She's Director of the Peter McMullen Centre on Statelessness at the University of Melbourne.